about the interview?
Yeah, Brad.
Is it okay to do it now?
Yeah, fine. You have to bear with me. I come down with a cold. I can't hardly talk.
Okay, well, if it gets too bad, tell me to stop and we'll talk some other time.
That's all right.
As I told you in the letter, I'm going to try to write a book on the bonus baby era, those 5 years where you guys had to stay with the team for 2 years.
Right. Was that only a five-year period?
Yeah, only a five-year period where they were required. Well, actually, it wasn't even that because after 57...
They changed it, yeah.
Yeah, and then those guys that were the bonus babies at that point could be sent down even if they didn't have their 2 years.
Right. And I fell in that category.
Right. You know, a bunch of other guys signed that last year did, but for the most part, you all come under the same heading of indentured servants, I guess, for that period of time.
Yeah.
Before that, there were various rules. There was one rule where the bonus boys had to be brought up at the end of the first year, or they would be lost. And another rule at one time was they could be signed to any bonus they wanted and assigned to a specific level contract, like a AA contract or a Class B contract or something, and they could not be sent down from there without being lost.
Oh, okay.
But just those 5 years was the one that you came under. I have found in talking to several of you fellows that the bonus that was reported and the bonus that was in fact were vastly different. What was your bonus?
Mine was 50.
It was a 50 bonus?
50,000.
Okay. I believe that's the first one that I read that is what it was.
Well, most of the papers at the time, though, I think had 65.
Did they? I don't remember that.
And through the years, I never denied that it was 50, so.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay, well, that's a first. Who was the scout who scouted you or signed you for the Giants?
Well, the one that got credit for it was Dutch Ruger.
Was who? I'm sorry?
His first name was Dutch.
Uh-huh.
His last name was Ruther.
Oh, sure. Dutch Ruther, of course. R-U-E-T-H-E-R, right.
The old left-handed pitcher.
Yeah. Other teams were after you, no doubt?
Yeah. The Yankees were after me, but they wouldn't offer any, they didn't have bonus boys. Even though I find out after the fact, I think they paid some players under the table.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Well, they did have two eventually, Frank Legia and, who's the other one? Infielder. Tommy Carroll.
Oh, okay.
Who neither one amounted to anything. But yes, they were among the most frugal teams.
Okay. Well, I know, I think Darren Johnson, who signed at the same time I did, got some money under the table. I've never been able to confirm that. We grew up in the same area and kind of competed against each other in high school.
Uh-huh. Must have been a pretty good matchup.
Pardon?
That must have been a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we had some pretty good players out in Southern California in those days. But I lost my train of thought.
Other teams.
Oh, the other teams. The Pirates were probably, if everything would have been equal, I would have signed with the Pirates. Because as growing up as a kid in L.A., they let me come out almost every, I don't remember, whenever they were home, like every Thursday night, pitch batting practice and kind of work out with them.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was an old L.A. Angel, these are, pre-West Coast teams. This is the old Pacific Coast League. The Angels never extended that opportunity to me. And it was really done through my, my American Legion and high school coach. So I pitched batting practice, I guess probably from about my sophomore year through my junior year, once a week to the old Hollywood Stars, which was the Pirates AAA team.
Right.
Mazeroski and Bobby Bragan was the manager. Those guys were all coming through there. And so when the Giants made me the official offer, we called Joe Brown, actually called Bobby Bragan, and ultimately got to Joe Brown, and advised him was all they had to do was match it, and I would sign with the Pirates. And I used to, see Joe Brown as I played through the years, and he used to always make it a point to come up and tell me that in all his years and experience, nobody had ever given him that opportunity. And I just felt that, you know, I kind of had an allegiance there. I didn't know one team from the other.
Sure.
I didn't even know what the major leagues were. Never seen a game. All at once I was there.
The Pirates were very free spending. I am surprised they did.
The reason that they, you know, he told my father, because he had to do the negotiating. They had the two O'Brien twins.
Right.
And they even had Paul Pettit at the time, too.
Well, I've got the list. I should have it here in front of me.
So
I've got
they were
the...
kind of really weighted with bonus players.
There was a limit at one point of only, that's 20% of the roster, of five per roster.
Oh, okay.
And that may have been, let me see, you signed in 56, the Pirates had, where's my list of Pirates? Now, the O'Brien twins' bonus status was gone then. They had Lauren Pepper, Red Swanson, and Buddy Pritchard. They already had three on their roster they had to carry.
Okay, well, I knew they had at least a couple, and I thought it was the O'Brien guys.
Well, their time was up in 55.
Yeah, okay.
So, actually, your choice was, in essence, the Pirates.
In terms of the big money being offered, it was really the Giants. I had everybody scouting me as a kid, but when it came time to come forward with offers, it was really the Giants.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to high school?
In the city of Alhambra, California.
Uh-huh. What school?
The school's name was Mark, M-A-R-K, and then Keppel, K-E-P-P-E-L.
Uh-huh. Is it still around?
Oh, yeah.
Would they have your record by any chance?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know.
I'll drop them a line.
Somebody in the athletic department might have that.
Yeah, I'll check. Some have been available. Others said they never kept any records back in those days, other than a scorebook. But I'll check. Do you know what your record was?
No, I don't in high school. I know in American Legion it was like, I don't know, 49-4.
Wow.
In high school... Well, of course, you know, you can only play so many games. If I had to guess, it's probably, you know, 30-4, something like that.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I've got a left-handed pitching son. He's in college now. He can tell you to the out his record for the last 5 or 6 years.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I guess I was so wrapped up in what I was doing and doing it so well as a kid that I didn't pay a lot of attention to the records.
Yeah. Well, they weren't stressed as greatly as they are nowadays,
yeah,
I don't believe.
Well, with the age of the computer, they can tell you anything you want to know.
Yeah, within a second.
So, really.
Do you know whose roster spot you took when you joined the Giants?
I do not. Now, you know, I may not have taken anybody's at the moment because I think the official day that I went on the roster was like September 1st.
Oh, well, then you didn't do it. Okay.
When they could expand it, you know, to 40. So it wouldn't have been till the next spring that somebody didn't make the club on account of me.
Several teams did that. They told the boys to take 6 weeks off or so, or just let them ride with them or something before they actually put them on the roster, which seems to be a much smarter thing to do than to set somebody free.
Yeah, they signed me in late August, and by the time my dad and I flew back there, because he had to sign the contract, I wasn't of age.
Yeah, you were 17, weren't you?
17, uh-huh.
Do you realize, you probably do, you have the major league record since 1900 for most wins by an 18-year-old?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That's still true?
Well, unless somebody did it the other day, it was true last year, anyhow.
No, nobody's done it. I heard that. Somebody brought that to my attention on a local radio show the other day, and I said, geez, I just don't read those kinds of books unless somebody tells me. I'm not aware of it.
Yeah. Well, it's not something that probably would occur to anybody either, especially with three wins being a record. But been a lot of 18-year-olds, and nobody did it as well, evidently. Mike, could you hold on the other phones?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Hello?
No, you got me still.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hello?
Still got me.
Still you? Okay. This doggone call waiting is an excellent idea, but it doesn't work half the time.
Yeah, we have it at home, too.
Okay, well, if they want me, I guess they'll call me back. Okay, what kind of... This is a question that has brought very, very tremendously different answers from the fellows I've spoken with. The reception by your teammates, what was it like?
Well, as I recall, and I guess maybe being so doggone young, I could have been oblivious to some things, but they seemed to receive me pretty well.
Good.
You know, I think the fact that I came in September, I didn't bump, you know, somebody off the roster. The Giants at that time were an old, failing organization. And even into the next year, into 57, it was just a bad old club.
Yes.
You know, made major changes when they came west. So, you know, they played a lot of practical jokes on me. Don Mueller and Whitey Lockman, some of those guys would play, you know, nailed my shoes to the clubhouse floor, tied my glove to the hook in the dugout, and, you know, put a couple of New York directories in my duffel bag when I was traveling. And, you know, I guess things that they would do with maybe any new young player. So I was, but I think I was pretty well received. Wes Westrum really took me under his wing.
I interviewed him for a magazine.
Pardon?
I interviewed him for a magazine article a couple of years ago. He is certainly a nice person.
Yes, he is. And he always was. And he was, you know, kind of, I'm going to say, closer to my father's age, certainly, than he was me.
Oh, yeah.
And being the catcher and everything, and he just literally really did with it. He and his family kind of took me under their wing and saw that I got settled okay in New York, and yeah, he was just a real fine man.
That's good. I've heard that a lot of fellows say that they were accepted well and treated nicely. Others say they were almost treated like lepers.
No, in fact, the first maybe half a year I was there, they had me room with, remember Bucky Walters?
Sure.
The coach, he was the pitching coach.
He was your father's age or more.
Yeah. Oh, he's probably older than my father.
Yeah. What about the adjustment? Now, Jim Small told me when he was at home, he couldn't stay out after 9 o'clock, and then all of a sudden he signed with the Tigers, and 3 days later he was in New York, and he was standing there with the bellhop wanting a tip, and he didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Did you have trouble with that?
Well, I think the hardest part was all the free time I had alone. It was, I guess you could say, lonesome. I mean, I really valued my time at the ballpark.
Uh-huh.
Because that was the only time that I was able to feel like I was part of something. When the game ended because of the age discrepancy on the road, you know, guys would go drinking or something, and I was, hell, I didn't know what alcohol was. And then at home they had family.
Sure.
So I spent an inordinate amount of time by myself, and I guess the only good fortune was, at least in those days, for the most part, you could walk the cities without being mugged.
Yeah, well, that's something that's long gone, I guess.
Yeah, so I did a lot of that. I, you know, ate by myself. I went to a lot of movies. You know, I just did things to keep busy, looking forward to going to the park.
Did you have a roommate in New York?
No, I lived at the hotel on 57th and Columbus Circle. And then I got married young, so the first full year we were there, my wife was there. And I had an apartment in the same complex that where Wes Westrum and his family lived.
Oh, that makes it good.
I didn't have a car, so I was able to commute with him.
Mm-hmm.
That was an experience. And it's not commuting, but... you know, when you come from suburban California where everything's kind of Heinz 57 and go into the ethnic neighborhoods of New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'd never seen anything like that.
That's a culture shock in itself.
Oh, boy, it really was. And we happened to be in what was primarily a Jewish neighborhood in the one, quote, Protestant housing project. And so when we went out shopping, you know, just the way kosher food and the fact that the way they sold vegetables and fruit, you know, we bought everything by the pound, they sold it by the piece.
Yeah.
So it was, It was interesting, but it was certainly different.
Yes, I can imagine, especially to a 17 or 18 year old.
Yeah, my perception of the world was pretty small anyway. I hadn't been on an airplane until I went to New York.
Everything at once.
Yeah, really.
How did your manager accept you, Bill Rigney?
Pretty good. I don't remember ever having any problems with him. I think he just, you know, was looking for anything that might be a breath of fresh air.
Oh, they had a terrible team those 2 years.
Just old.
Yeah.
Those were some hard-nosed guys, too. I mean, they were good guys to me, but you take your Hank Thompsons and Dusty Rhodes and Marv Grissoms. I mean, there were some old, salty guys.
Yes, indeed. This is a question I've received a great deal of variance and answers to. What kind of coaching did you receive? Primarily from the pitchers, the young pitchers. They say that they really didn't get too much, but the position players say they were helped pretty much.
I don't remember getting an awful lot, even though, of course, that was before the day of videotape, but they did take some film of me in spring training 1 year, and Bucky Walters gave it to me and said, you know, if you ever get off track, go back and look at this, because this is where you're throwing at what I would say is, you know, the truest of forms.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I think there wasn't a lot of coaching. I mean, I don't think, not only just as a kid, I even think all the way through my career, I don't ever felt that I got a lot of just really one-on-one coaching.
Huh, even as you...
People were there to try to keep you in shape and keep you busy.
But not instruct. I'll be darned.
And I always tell people that all the years I played with the Giants, which was a lot, not once did Carl Hubbell ever come up to me and share with me how he threw his screwball or ask me how I threw mine.
Huh.
Here's a guy that, you know, was famous, worked in the organization, was always around.
Yeah.
But I think that's just the way it was.
Well, I'm very surprised. But that's pretty much what the young pitchers said, that the, we didn't talk about it beyond the first couple of years, but they got very little. They were thrown in a few games and sink or swim.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why you didn't get the training, was that you weren't part of their plan at the moment. So they'd spent more time with what, you know, the guys that were going to try to run out there every day.
Right. That makes sense. Do you recall your first game?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Who was it against?
Well, the first game I came in relief against the Phillies on Labor Day weekend. And I came into relief, and I pitched to, and I don't remember the exact order, but it was Del Ennis, Jim Greengrass, and Stan Lopata.
Oh, some big sticks.
Yeah, had three ground balls to second base. Thought, boy, this league's not going to be so tough. And then I started a game, that was like Monday. I started a game, I think, Thursday night in Philadelphia, and I went to the, I don't know, fourth or fifth inning, but boy, I was wilder than a March hare. I mean, I think it happened so quick on the Labor Day, I didn't have a chance to get nervous. But when they told me I was going to start in a couple days' preparation, and I was never wild or one to have any control problems, but I sure had them there.
Well, butterflies can do it.
Yeah, and I pitched against Kurt Simmons in that game. I don't remember whether we won or lost. I know I didn't get a decision.
Well, you were 0-1 that first year.
Yeah, and that was a game that I did lose in the Polo Grounds against, I think, the Cardinals, whatever team Alvin Dark was on. I think it was the Cardinals.
At that point, yeah, Cubs or Cardinals. Cardinals, I guess, at that point, yeah.
Yeah, I lost that one in the Polo Grounds.
Well, you gave up 7 hits in 7 innings, but you walked 10 batters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which was most done. You know, if you look at my whole career, even with all the arm problems I had, I still never walked many players.
No, your control was about 3 per 9 innings,
yeah,
which is pretty good. Well, you were one, even though you were able to be sent down at the start of 58, you were in the rotation by then.
Yeah, I pitched enough in 57, well, I say enough. I mean, I guess I pitched around 100 innings, as I recall.
75, yeah.
And they just wanted to make a major change. I think they wanted to start in San Francisco with just a young ball club. I mean, I was still the extreme, but that's when they brought in, you know, Cepeda and Davenport and just a lot of young players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they saw at least an equal value in me as to some of the old guys they had, so they just let them go.
Yeah, well, it was certainly not a loss as far as their performance. In fact, that 58 Giant team was a very good team.
Yeah. We had nothing but good teams. We just couldn't win. We were always the best second-place team.
Yeah, very close to first.
Yeah.
19, we're getting beyond your bonus days, but I have a few questions and we'll get back to bonus. 1959, you just a couple days ago lost a no-hitter. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I was driving in my car and I heard, well, there goes my asterisk. Well, I shouldn't have had a no-hitter anyway. I mean, if the records will reflect that Richie Ashburn got a hit in the sixth inning.
Right, I remember that.
And it got washed out. So I think some of the other guys maybe are being slighted or shorted.
I think it's, I don't know, my first reaction, like I just wrote a letter of indignation to the Sporting News. My first reaction was that this rules committee ought to get to work on hunger and wars, because if they can redefine a no-hitter, they could redefine a war to eliminate all the wars.
Yeah, for sure.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what the rationale behind some of these things. They've got to have better things to do.
Well, the thing is, there have been so many no-hitters the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That they figured they had to do something to lower the number. And then rather than get better hitters, I guess they
yeah.
make new rules. Your trade to Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
How did you feel about that? You've been a Giant your life.
That was well, of course, the 62 season was probably the most difficult one in my career because I had been among the leaders of the Giants pitching staff for, you know, 3 or 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and then came up with a sore arm. And actually, my arm started bothering me at the end of the 61 season, but when I went to spring training in 62, I could just never get it in shape and come out of it. So I was, you know, in some ways useless to the club that year.
It was far and away your worst year.
Yeah, and to watch all the success that was going on. And you know, I won a couple of important games at the time for them, but I just never really felt part of that team. And then, you know, when I got traded in the wintertime, I think your first trade you view as nobody wants you to get mm-hmm. rid of me. And you don't think that, well, there's always somebody on the other side that's, you know, accepting you. And the Orioles were, you know, made it a kind of an easy transition for me. But that was hard because I had settled into the Bay Area. I was from California. They were the Giants were the only organization I had known. And, you know, to have somebody say we don't want you anymore is kind of hard.
I can imagine.
But after that, you know, you start to learn that, hey, you're just a commodity and
it's not personal.
You go where they send you or you go home.
Well, you struggled in Baltimore.
Yeah, I struggled for the 62 and 63 seasons were very difficult times for me. The Orioles sent me to Rochester. Well, you could call it a rehab. You could call it whatever you want, but I was sent there to find out if I could pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I did pitch well. I still had some arm problems, but I pitched pretty well.
Yeah, you pitched very well there.
And as a result, in the following spring, and I was never, Hank Bauer was never a great fan of mine, or me of him,
mm-hmm.
because he really liked those hard throwers.
Yeah.
And they had them with, you know, Palmer had come up, and they had McNally, and Barber, and Pappas, and Wally Bunker, and so I was certainly expendable. So in the spring of 65, toward the end of the spring, I was traded to the to the Senators.
You seem to come back around. Everything seemed to be going pretty well there.
Yeah, I did really well. I was not a regular starter. I was kind of a jack of all trades. I started relief, short relief, long relief, did a little bit of everything, and as a result, created a market for myself again. wound up going back to the Giants.
Was that like coming home?
Yeah, it was.
I bet it was. Well, by this point, you were a heck of a pitcher.
Well, I was certainly a more refined pitcher than I had been, you know. I still was never as talented as I was before I hurt my shoulder.
But you learned a lot.
But I learned a lot, and I was able to, you know, continue to have good control and savvy and be left-handed, which was always a plus.
Oh, yeah. Well, you, there were two bonus babies won Cy Young Awards, and you and Koufax.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, overall, your career, I guess, is probably, you or Lindy McDaniel, depends on how you look. You were a starter and McDaniel was a reliever, but one of you two were second to Koufax among all the bonus baby pitchers as far as career value goes.
That's interesting.
It was a good career. It was a career that I think anybody would have been happy with.
Well, you know, people say, God, if you could do it over, what would you do different? And I wouldn't do anything different. I would just have loved to have played that same period of time healthy.
Yeah.
Because I think at one time, and Gooden has, I believe Gooden has since broken the record, but I was the youngest player to win 50 games in the major leagues.
I think Gooden did, yes, but not by a whole lot as far as time.
You know, maybe even been broken again since then, but, you know, they were talking about the next Warren Spahn, and boy, that was certainly being put in select company.
Yes, indeed.
But I always felt I was, you know, blessed with a lot of God-given talent, and then I had that doggone arm thing. I mean, the shoulder thing really, you know, set me back. So,
did you have surgery or did you work it out?
No, I worked it out. I went the cortisone route, and I pitched some games I probably shouldn't have. You know, taken pain pills, and you know, the shoulder never was and still isn't the same. But you know, you learn to get by, and you learn to. I became a short armer.
Mm-hmm.
Not by design, it's just that's what happened.
Necessity, yeah.
So just your whole method and mode of pitching just changes. And fortunately, I was able to survive. Most guys didn't.
No, I guess it your makeup, I guess, is measured in there somehow.
Well, you know, in those days, I mean, I saw some of those guys that had surgery, too. And boy, you talk about a layered out.
Yeah.
Elbow surgery, you know, those guys had 9-10-inch incisions, and had shoulder surgery, they literally went right through everything. So.
That's, I guess, the major difference in athletics today is the ability to go in and correct something without having to split the whole body open.
Yep, and it's just, you know, saved a lot of guys' careers.
Yes. What is your... You did not suffer from the bonus rule. You may have a little bit, you know, but not like a lot of these poor boys who pitched or two or three games in 2 years or pinch ran a half a dozen times. You were one of the top four or five performers in your bonus time. But what is your overall opinion of the rule?
Well, yeah, I didn't. I think it, you know, if you look at just the rule itself, it probably was not a good one. It was a hindrance to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be the right guy in the right organization, trying to go. Well, they relocated and wanted to go young, and I fit into all of that. But I had some, you know, I used to talk to some of the bonus players. I guess we probably didn't have a lot of other people always to talk to, or at least we had something common to talk about.
Right.
And, you know, some of those guys were just frustrated as hell because they were just no opportunity to even see if they couldn't make it. I mean, they just were there. And at least I got a chance to, you know, spot pitch an inning here and inning there, start once in a while. But,
well, the Giants did a real good job in giving their bonus babies the opportunity. Joe Malfitano and Paul Giel,
yeah.
Both of them had the chances, just like you did. And most of the teams did not give them a chance like that. Well, that a couple questions maybe off the beaten track here. You still get fan mail from your fans?
Yeah, surprisingly. I bet you I get on an average of 2 to 3 a day.
Do you really?
Now, they don't always come on the same day.
I know what you mean, yeah.
If you measure them over a month, yeah. I mean, it's, and most of them, surprisingly enough, come from the East Coast.
Huh.
And they all have, you know, cards in them, which you sign them in a self-addressed envelope. So somewhere, somebody out there is obviously selling our address list.
There's a book called The Baseball Address List.
Oh, okay.
And it's got the address of every living player who played, I think, since 1910 or something like that.
Okay. Well, so they must have be tied into somebody in the retirement office or something, because I moved, you know, about 5 years ago.
And they found you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there must be some connection somewhere. It has to be. I grew up out there in Los Altos.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I saw you many times.
Whereabouts in Los Altos?
On Covington Road.
Sure. Well, I still live on, I have a condo right on the corner of the Foothill Expressway in Homestead.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, in fact, 1965 I moved, you know where Levin is? Covington Dead Ends into Grant Road.
Right.
I lived in those Waverly Park homes with my family from 1965.
Okay. Yeah, right. Okay, sure.